Welcome back, everyone. We're diving into a topic that I find super fascinating: propaganda and psychological warfare.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely one of those things that once you start noticing it, you see it everywhere.
Right. Like, it's almost kind of creepy once you start to realize how much we're all influenced by these tactics. And to guide our deep dive today, we're going to be looking at this textbook, Psychological Warfare.
Classic.
I know, right? Published back in 1954. But don't worry, we're not going to get bogged down in outdated stuff. What we're going to do is pull out the core concepts and then connect them to the world today, especially how these tactics pop up in our modern lives.
Because the thing is, even though it's an old book, the psychology behind it, how people are influenced, that doesn't really change.
Exactly. So let's set the stage first. What exactly is propaganda, according to this book?
Well, the textbook defines it as any planned communication that's meant to influence a group of people for a specific purpose.
Okay, so it's not just about spreading information. It's about shaping opinions and actions, yeah, right?
Exactly. It's about getting people to think or do something specific. And the thing is, this definition can be applied to so many things beyond just like wartime leaflets.
Mm. That's kind of what I was thinking. Like, where do we draw the line between persuasion and manipulation? Because it's all about influence.
It is. And that's where things get really interesting, because propaganda tactics can be found in advertising, in the news, even in entertainment.
Oh, for sure. Like, think about how products are marketed to us, or how certain political ideas are presented in the media.
Right. It's all about framing the message in a way that influences how people perceive it. It's kind of unsettling when you think about it.
It is, because it makes you question what you believe versus what you've been persuaded to believe.
Oh.
Okay, so to understand how this all works, let's look back at some historical examples. And I want to start with one that I bet a lot of people might not expect.
Okay, hit me with it.
Themistocles. Ancient Greece.
Themistocles. Now, he was a brilliant military strategist.
Right. So during the Persian Wars, he needed to get these Ionian allies on his side. But instead of using brute force, he got creative.
Let me guess, psychological warfare.
Exactly. He had these inscriptions carved into stones that were placed near watering holes.
Oh, that's smart. He knew that people would gather there.
Exactly. And they couldn't not see the messages. It was all about reaching the right people with the right message at the right time. It makes you wonder what Themistocles would have done with, like, Twitter or Instagram.
Oh, man, he would have been a social media master.
Right. Okay, so that's ancient Greece. Now, fast forward a few centuries, we've got another military genius who was a master of psychological warfare, Genghis Khan.
Oh, yeah. Genghis Khan, he was brutal, but also incredibly strategic.
His approach to war was as much about psychology as it was about, you know, actual fighting.
Totally. He'd intentionally spread rumors to scare his opponents, and he was known for using captured enemy spies to, like, spread misinformation and terror.
It was all about creating this aura of invincibility, right?
Yeah.
Making his enemies feel like they were doomed before they even started fighting.
Exactly. It was psychological warfare at its finest. Break their spirit before you even engage in battle.
Now, hopping over to early America during the Revolutionary War, we've got a fascinating example of propaganda that was used right here on home soil.
Okay, I'm all ears.
So, at the Battle of Bunker Hill, they used these pamphlets, these leaflets, to call on people to join the fight for freedom. Pretty basic, right?
Yeah, but sometimes the simplest messages are the most powerful.
Right. And what's interesting is that these leaflets, even though they were simple, were super effective in getting people to support the Patriot cause.
They tapped into those deep-seated desires for liberty and self-determination. It's a reminder that you don't always need fancy techniques. Sometimes a direct appeal to people's values is all it takes.
Totally. Okay, so we've seen how propaganda has been used throughout history, but it was during the World Wars that it really evolved into, like, a major strategic weapon.
Oh, yeah. World War II especially. The scale and the sophistication of propaganda during that time were just off the charts.
It was a total information war, right? They were using radio broadcasts, leaflet drops, even forged currency, all to influence and manipulate people.
It's crazy when you think about it. And what's even more interesting is how different the approaches were between the Axis and the Allied powers.
Oh, definitely. Like, yeah. The Nazis, they were all about fear and control. They manipulated information to, like, create this atmosphere of terror and obedience.
Right. They wanted to control the narrative completely, while the Allies, on the other hand, they focused more on truth and morale boosting.
It was about inspiring hope and resistance, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a reminder that propaganda can be used for very different purposes, depending on the goals and the values of the people using it.
And a really great example of this contrast is in how they handled troop morale. They'd use these leaflets, right? And they tailored the message depending on who they were targeting.
Yeah. Like, a leaflet aimed at Allied soldiers might show a happy family gathering around a Christmas tree, reminding them what they were fighting for. But a leaflet dropped on enemy troops might show them, like, isolated and alone in the trenches, emphasizing their hopelessness.
It's almost like psychological warfare, playing on their emotions and deepest fears.
It was. And it shows that propaganda isn't just about facts. It's about emotions, perceptions, and ultimately influencing behavior.
Totally. And that's why I think understanding propaganda analysis is so important, especially today.
Oh, absolutely. We're bombarded with information all the time now. We need to be able to sift through it and figure out what's real and what's not.
Right, because it's not always obvious, right?
Exactly. And the textbook actually gives us some really good tools for doing this.
Okay, I'm ready. Break it down for me.
Well, the first step is to identify the source. Like, who's behind the message and what's their agenda? Then think about the intended audience. Who are they trying to reach and why?
Okay, so it's like being a detective, right?
Right.
Looking for clues about who's trying to persuade you and why.
Exactly. And finally, and this is probably the trickiest part, is looking for the hidden message behind content that might seem innocent at first glance.
So it's about being more mindful, right?
Yeah.
Questioning everything,
yeah.
Not just taking things at face value.
You got it. And the book gives this really interesting example. It compares two leaflets about VD. One is a genuine leaflet from the U.S. Army, just giving straight up advice about prevention and treatment.
Okay, makes sense.
But the other leaflet is a fake. It was actually made by the Japanese during World War II, but they designed it to look like it came from the Americans.
Wait, so they were spreading fake health information? Why?
This is where it gets devious. The fake leaflet was meant to turn Filipinos against American soldiers. It claimed that the Americans were spreading the disease, trying to make them look irresponsible and dangerous.
Wow, that's messed up.
Right. And it shows how propaganda can exploit people's fears and prejudices, twisting the truth to serve their own agenda.
It's a reminder that we can't just passively consume information. We have to be active, question things, analyze, and think for ourselves. Otherwise, we're just letting other people control our thoughts and beliefs.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And as we move into the Cold War, we see how these tactics become even more important because the battleground shifts from physical territory to the realm of ideas and ideology.
Okay, that's a perfect segue into our next part. We're going to be diving into the Cold War, and I think it's going to be really fascinating to see how propaganda evolved in that context.
Yeah, the Cold War, that was a whole different ballgame when it came to propaganda. Like you said, it wasn't about conquering land anymore. It was about winning hearts and minds.
So how did things change? Like, was it still all about dropping leaflets and making radio broadcasts? Or did it get more, like, subtle?
It was a mix, really. I mean, those traditional methods were definitely still in play. Think about, like, Voice of America broadcasting into the Soviet Union or Radio Free Europe trying to counter Soviet propaganda. But yeah, things definitely got more sophisticated, too.
More subtle, huh? Like, what kind of stuff are we talking about?
Well, think about cultural exchanges, like sending musicians or artists or athletes to other countries. It was a way to project, like, a positive image and subtly promote their ideology.
So it's like instead of shouting your message, you're kind of like slipping it in under the radar.
Exactly. It was all about soft power and influencing perceptions without being too overt about it.
Mm. So it's kind of like a charm offensive, but on a global scale.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's like, hey, look at our awesome culture and how happy our people are. Don't you want to be like us?
And it makes you think, like, where's the line between propaganda and just like normal diplomacy?
Right. That's a really good point, because during the Cold War, it became really blurry. Like, was that cultural exchange genuine or was it just a clever form of propaganda? It's hard to say for sure.
It's almost like there's this gray area where persuasion turns into manipulation.
Exactly. And this whole idea of like blurry lines and hidden agendas, it's even more relevant today with the internet and social media.
Oh, for sure. It's so easy to spread information and misinformation now. It's like a whole new battleground for propaganda.
It is. And it makes those tools for analyzing propaganda that we talked about even more important.
Totally. Okay, before we get too deep into the modern stuff, I want to go back to the textbook for a sec. It talks about all these different types of propaganda.
Oh, yeah. And what's interesting is how many of those tactics are still used today, even though the technology's changed.
Right. Like, we're not dropping leaflets from airplanes as much anymore, but we're still trying to influence each other all the time. Okay, so let's start with, like, the most basic type. Troop morale propaganda.
Yeah, keeping soldiers motivated, that was and still is super important, especially during long conflicts.
I can imagine. So what do they do? Like, do they just, like, hand out inspirational posters or something?
Well, it was more than just posters, although those were definitely used. It was about using anything that could boost morale, instill courage, and create a sense of camaraderie.
Okay, so, like, speeches from commanders. Stories of heroism, that kind of thing.
Exactly. It was about reminding soldiers why they were fighting and making them feel like they were part of something bigger than themselves.
Did they ever use fear tactics? Like, if we lose, the enemy will do terrible things.
They definitely used fear sometimes, but it was tricky. Too much fear could backfire and actually make things worse.
Right, because you don't want your soldiers to be paralyzed with fear. You want them to be brave and determined. Okay, what about those gray leaflets we talked about earlier? The ones that were disguised to look like they came from the enemy.
Ah, yes. Gray propaganda. That was some sneaky stuff. The whole point was to sow confusion and distrust within the enemy ranks.
By making it seem like the message was coming from their own side.
Exactly. It was a way to bypass those natural defenses people have against enemy propaganda.
It's like planting a seed of doubt, making them question their own leadership.
Exactly. And it could be really effective, especially if you combined it with other psychological pressure. The textbook gives examples of gray leaflets that were dropped on German soldiers during World War II.
What kind of stuff did they say?
Oh, they'd highlight things like, you know, how German officers were getting better rations or had safer positions. Anything to create resentment and division.
Wow. So it was about exploiting those existing tensions.
Precisely. And the messages were often really subtle, but that made them even more insidious. Because if you're constantly being bombarded with these messages, it starts to wear you down.
Makes you wonder about the ethics of all this.
Yeah.
Like, where do you draw the line between persuasion and straight-up manipulation?
That's a million-dollar question, right? And it's one that people were debating even back then. It's tricky because, yeah, those gray leaflets were effective, but they're also based on deception.
It's like a slippery slope, isn't it? Once you start bending the truth, it's hard to know where to stop.
Totally. And this is something we still grapple with today, especially with all the fake news and misinformation online.
Okay, so we've talked about troop morale and gray propaganda. What about those surrender leaflets we discussed earlier? The ones directly aimed at enemy soldiers.
Right. Surrender leaflets, those were a big part of psychological warfare, especially towards the end of a conflict.
So the idea was to, like, weaken the enemy's resolve first. And then offer them a way out.
Exactly. And these leaflets were often very specific in their instructions, like, take this leaflet to your nearest officer, or here's how to surrender safely.
So it's not just about spreading a message, it's about giving them a clear course of action.
Right. It's like, we know you're tired of fighting, here's how to end it.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing these leaflets only worked if the enemy actually believed what they were saying.
Oh, absolutely. Credibility was huge. The textbook emphasizes that over and over again. If your propaganda is full of obvious lies, no one's going to buy it.
Because even if they hate you, the enemy can still look at a map and see where your troops are, right? Facts are facts.
Right. So even when they're trying to deceive, good propagandists will try to weave in elements of truth. It makes the whole thing more believable.
It's a delicate balancing act. Okay, so we've talked about different types of propaganda, but what about the methods? Like, how did they actually get these messages out to people? Was it still mainly radio and leaflets?
Well, radio and leaflets were still important, but the Cold War also saw new technologies being used. Film was a powerful tool, and then TV started to become more widespread.
So they were using the latest and greatest tech to get their message out. Makes sense.
Right. And it wasn't just those obvious channels either. They incorporate propaganda into things like educational materials or cultural events, even just casual social gatherings.
It's like they were trying to weave propaganda into every aspect of life.
They were. It was about creating this whole atmosphere, this whole worldview that supported their ideology.
Wow. It sounds like it was pretty hard to escape propaganda during the Cold War.
It was definitely pervasive. But that brings us to an important point. The limitations of propaganda.
Limitations. But you've been talking about how powerful it can be.
It can be powerful, for sure, but it's not magic. There are definitely things that can limit its effectiveness.
Like what?
Well, one obvious one is just reaching your audience. Like if your leaflets get dropped in the wrong place or your radio broadcast gets jammed, your message is gone.
Right. You got to be able to get your message in front of people's eyeballs or it's useless.
Exactly. And even if you do reach them, there's no guarantee they're going to believe you. They might be skeptical or they might just not care.
It's like you can't force someone to like a certain type of music no matter how many times you play it for them.
Perfect analogy. And this is where understanding your audience is key. Good propagandists will try to tailor their message to appeal to the specific beliefs and values of their target audience.
So it's not just about blasting out your message to everyone. It's about knowing who you're talking to and crafting a message that will resonate with them.
Exactly. And another big limitation is if your actions contradict your words, people are going to see right through you.
Like if you're preaching peace but building up your military at the same time?
Exactly. Your propaganda has to be consistent with your actions or people will lose trust.
So even though propaganda can be powerful, it's not a foolproof tool.
Right. And that's why it's so important to understand these limitations, not just so we can create effective propaganda, but so we can recognize it and defend against it when other people are using it on us.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. We've talked about types of propaganda, credibility, methods of dissemination, and even the limits of propaganda. What I'm taking away from this is that propaganda is, like, everywhere. It's not just something from history books. It's all around us.
Couldn't agree more. And the more we understand about it, the better equipped we are to navigate the world around us.
Okay, so now that we've got a good understanding of the theory, let's dive into some more historical examples. Okay, so we've got a good grasp on the techniques and the nuances of propaganda. Now let's bring it all together and look at some specific moments in history where these concepts really played out. We've touched on a few examples already, like Themistocles and Genghis Khan, but I think it'll be really fascinating to dive into the world wars, because those conflicts seem to mark a turning point in how propaganda was used.
Oh, absolutely. The world wars, especially World War II, that's where you see a massive leap forward in the scale and the sophistication of propaganda. It became this global phenomenon with nations really harnessing the power of mass media.
Right. So let's start with World War I. What were some of the key strategies they were using back then?
World War I, I mean, in a lot of ways, it was the first truly modern propaganda war. Countries started to realize just how important it was to shape public opinion, not just among their own citizens, but also on the international stage.
Okay, so they were trying to influence global perceptions of the war.
Exactly. They were using newspapers, posters, leaflets, even film, anything to spread their message and demonize the enemy.
It sounds like they were throwing everything they had at it.
They were. And the British, for instance, they were really good at using their established press to kind of control the narrative and shape how the war was being portrayed to the rest of the world.
So it's not just about winning battles. It's about winning the information war as well.
Exactly. And this led to, like, dedicated organizations being created specifically to manage propaganda. The British, they had the Department of Information, which was all about coordinating and disseminating propaganda both domestically and abroad.
Wow. So they were really taking this stuff seriously.
They were. Propaganda was no longer an afterthought. It became a central part of their war strategy. And then, of course, came World War II, which took things to a whole new level.
Right. World War II, that was a whole different ballgame.
It was a propaganda battleground on a scale never seen before. Both sides, the Axis and the Allies, they poured tons of resources into trying to sway hearts and minds, not just at home, but also behind enemy lines. And one of the most powerful tools they used was radio.
Oh, yeah, the radio. I've heard about those broadcasts, reaching across borders, trying to demoralize the enemy and boost their own troops.
It was almost like the radio itself became a weapon. Think about, like, Lord Ha Ha, who was broadcasting Nazi propaganda to British listeners, or the Voice of America, which was countering that with messages of hope and resistance.
And they weren't just giving speeches and stuff, right? Yeah. They were using music and entertainment, too.
Oh, absolutely. They'd weave in popular music, comedy skits, even dramas. It was all about making the broadcasts more engaging and relatable so people would actually listen.
It's a very clever way to sneak in your message under the guise of entertainment.
It is. And we can't forget about those leaflets. Millions and millions of them dropped from planes during World War II, blanketing entire cities with propaganda.
Yeah, I remember reading about that. It must have been surreal to see all those leaflets raining down from the sky.
It was a tactic that was used a lot, especially those surrender leaflets we talked about. Often they'd be dropped along with bombing raids.
Oh, wow. So first, you shake them up with bombs, then you offer them a way out with a leaflet.
Exactly. The Allies especially got really good at using this combo of force and persuasion to break down enemy resistance. But it wasn't just on the battlefield, right? Propaganda played a big role on the home front, too.
Oh, yeah. It was all about getting people to support the war effort, to demonize the enemy, to boost morale. I mean, think about those classic posters you see from that era, urging people to conserve resources or buy war bonds.
Right. Propaganda was everywhere. It was woven into the fabric of everyday life, shaping how people thought and acted.
It's kind of scary when you think about how powerful it can be.
It is. But it's also a testament to human creativity, right? I mean, think about the ingenuity and the effort that went into crafting these campaigns.
That's true. It's like a double-edged sword, I guess, that can be used for good or for evil.
Exactly. And the legacy of these propaganda wars is still with us today. You know, in a lot of ways, the information landscape we navigate now, it's shaped by what happened back then.
Right. It's like we're still trying to untangle truth from spin, fact from fiction.
That's why it's so important to understand the history of propaganda. It gives us the tools to analyze the info we're bombarded with, to recognize the techniques, and to think critically about those messages we encounter every day.
It's empowering, right? Knowing that we're not powerless against these tactics.
Totally. The more we know about propaganda, the better equipped we are to be informed, discerning citizens. And on that note, I think it's time to wrap up our deep dive.
It's been a fascinating journey for sure.
It has lots to think about.
Definitely. So until our next deep dive, stay curious, stay critical, and as always, thanks for listening.